Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is an X Tuesday episode, and it's also a 12 Days of the Comic Source episode. We're continuing our look at the Age of X-Men. In this episode, I'm going to be covering Marvelous X-Men number 3. It's written by Zach Thompson and Lonnie Nadler. We have art by Marco Faia, colors by Matt Miller. I'm never sure which one it is with him. And letters by Joe Caramagna. So the Marvelous X-Men, I guess you could say they're the uncanny X-Men of the X-Man universe. So Colossus, Storm, Magneto, Nature Girl, X-23, Nightcrawler, Jean Grey, and X-Man. Bishop was a member of the team when we had the first issue of this event. But he got it on with Jean Grey, for lack of a better way to put it, and ended up in prison. So that's where the Prisoner X series is going, and really enjoying that one. Apparently they were able to rehabilitate Jean. X-Man was able to, you know, replant memories and erase things and get her back on the straight and narrow. But they're adored, these Marvelous X-Men. They are, you know, the heroes, the champions of Earth, and they respond to mostly natural disasters. There's not really any supervillains that we've seen so far in any of these stories. But we've also seen where members of Department X are actually staging disasters for them to come and clean up and, you know, save the day just to inspire public trust. So that's a little sleazy in my mind. But most recently, the biggest threat has been a revolutionary guru, is the way it's put here, named En-Sabanur, and we know that to be the true name of Apocalypse, and he's spreading propaganda about love, of all things. You know, he's preaching that it's all about connection and community, and we shouldn't be following these unnatural laws that the powers that be have made about no friendships, no familial relationships, no physical relationships, no romantic relationships. It's just not, it's not natural. And finally, in this issue, that's at least brought up, and I'll get to that in a little bit. But I do want to remind everybody that we saw toward the end of the last issue that Magneto was starting to have visions and see things from his past, see true memories that he doesn't know where they're from. He doesn't know why he's remembering them. He doesn't remember those events ever happening. He's, you know, seeing basically through a window into another world, into another reality. And Storm had seen some of these visions as well, but she also, not only did Storm see the visions of her own, she also saw Magneto seeing his. So she knows that Magneto has an idea of what's going on in terms of something's not right. And I think she wants to confide in him and have a chance to talk to him. And so the story starts off, it says 6 hours from now. Superstorms are complex engines of energy fueled by heated, moist air. They rely on tension between the elements to rise. As warm air accumulates and ascends, the surrounding air swirls in to take its place, thus forming clouds which twist and clash and swell as if they're fed by the heart of the ocean. The conflicting winds rotate faster and faster, and the storms that rage within us work by the same principle. So obviously that storm, she's talking about weather, and she's talking about the storm within her, the storm within Magneto, how there's this tension, and she's trying to figure out what's going on. And she's floating up and way, you know, far up in the sky in the middle of the storm, lightning crashing all around, and Magneto is there as well, floating in a magnetic bubble. And she says, "So I suppose this is what we've come to, Eric." And, you know, just trying to find a way to connect. So we then backtrack to now, and it's Freeport, Bahamas, another big storm, and the X-Men are there to basically save as many people as they can and try to prevent as much disaster as they can, because there's this huge storm is raging. So Storm goes up, and she's going to try to control the weather as much as she can and shut the storm down. While she's doing that, she's thinking, you know, they don't really get it, right? They think that I must love missions where we take on weather because I'm the, you know, the weather person and it's my time to shine. But, you know, this isn't about me. It's about saving those people down there. And pushing back against nature, it's tough because, I mean, think of it like this. Why don't I end all destructive weather on Earth? Well, the fact is that this conflict is necessary in our biosystem. You need things like storms so the planet doesn't overheat, so we don't have droughts, so animals don't overpopulate. You know, some things need to run their course. These things need to happen. If we always try to force balance, we're going to screw something up. And she goes on to say, harmony can only be realized in the aftermath of strife. So eventually Storm is able to get the weather under control, so to speak. It's still raining a little bit, but it's much better than it was. And meanwhile, as Magneto is lifting ships and saving people, keeping their ships from capsizing, he tells Storm, you know, I still feel a strong magnetic field. There's more lightning on the way. And Storm says, I know, I'm working on it. But you can't even look me in the eye right now, Magneto. You've been avoiding me. We need to talk. And Magneto flies away, clearly not wanting to discuss anything with Storm. So the X-Men get back to the X-Sanctuary, and they turn on the news. They're pretty happy with the work they did in the Bahamas. And the news report is talking about N-Sabanur and his extracts and how they've started to amass a following. And as Xavier Day is approaching, N-Sabanur, Apocalypse is asking everybody to consider the past. And he's talking about the time when we were free to love. And this was the time of Xavier. You know, desire was nothing to be ashamed of, physical desire. And you had a life with your loved ones. And everybody needs to ask what they want for the future. And they ask him why he decided to head north. Apparently he's up in Canada. And he says, intimacy knows no borders. Our liberation is worldwide. So the X-Men are kind of worried about this, you know, starting to become a thing. And apparently there was a big rally in Vancouver, Canada, and that the X-Men missed it completely. There was no psychic call out like we saw earlier in the event when he had the event in Central Park. And so apparently there were a lot of people there, including Kitty Pryde. And then she comes on TV and she's talking about a time when we were free to love. And all of a sudden Colossus is, you know, very interested in what is on the screen. And they're kind of arguing, the X-Men are kind of arguing back and forth. It's clear they're individuals, you know, much more so than they are in our reality. In fact, Jean Grey says, I don't even know why they're putting this on TV. It just amplifies their message. And Nightcrawler's like, well, it's important for people to be informed. Meanwhile, Kitty's on the TV saying there was a time when desire is not to be ashamed of. And Magneto's saying, I've heard enough, turn it off. And X-Men says, no, we need to listen. I think we all can benefit from this. And Storm says, yeah, he's right. Regardless of whether we agree or not, as X-Men, we should never look away. You know, his words mean something to all those young mutants that are flocking to him. And we need to understand why they're drawn to him. So Magneto says, you know what, or Apocalypse rather says, what you may hear might unnerve you, but you know, I claimed a son because love's the only law that I acknowledge. And I encourage everybody to seek out your sons and your daughters, mothers and fathers. We weren't designed to be born in test tubes. You know, some of us were born of the flesh. And when we link hands with the people we love, it's like a whole new world. It's bringing the old and the new together. One that has yet to be, one that has already perished. It's our continuity. And the reporter says, well, you mentioned Xavier Day in your speech. Is it safe to assume we'll see you in London? And in answer, he says, watch the skies. The flames will burn brighter than ever before. And that Colossus has had it. He like smashes the TV and he's all upset. He says, you hear him? He's threatening the day we hold most sacred. And X-23 is like, you need to chill out, Colossus. We're pacifists. It's like, no, you're a pacifist. Well, we're all humanitarians. We're relief workers. You know, this all falls under the purview of Department X. We talked about this before. And Magneto's with Colossus, you know, ever the militant guy. He's like, no. Their tactics are dated. And it's clear that End Summoner is gaining traction. And today it's just a movement, but by Xavier Day, it could be a crusade. And Nature Girl she brings up an interesting point. And, you know, this is a point I've been making all along. She says, you know, the blue man, he's speaking directly to his listeners' biology, right? For millennia, our physiology has been coded to live in groups. That's how we evolved. It's a survival mechanism. There was strength in numbers. And X-23 is like, wait, you agree with him? She says, no, you're not listening to what I'm saying. I don't agree, but I understand why his ideas are comforting to people based on what we need as a species. And X-23 is like, Jean, what do you think? And Jean's like, no, I get it. I actually agree with Nature Girl. I understand why their platform is so appealing, which means I also understand why it's so dangerous. And X-23 is like, well, Department X. And Jean's like, no, they're not enough. We need to make a stand right now for evolutionary rights. And I find that to be interesting. Like, why are you assuming that the next stage of human or mutant evolution is for us to not have relationships? I would think it would go the other way, right? We'd be more connected. Again, there's strength in numbers. There's more collective knowledge in numbers. And so Nightcrawler, he makes his call. He says, I can't be involved in anything too political. Studio X won't allow it. And X-Men says, well, you know, we're each our own individuals, and we have the freedom to make a choice, but we also should support the others in their decision. And so it seems like we have Colossus, Jean Grey, Nature Girl, and Magneto ready to take a more active stance, and everybody else is kind of going to back off, so to speak. So Magneto heads to his quarters, and he's staring at the wall that has the big hole where he saw the memories, and Storm's had enough. She goes and confronts him and, you know, basically tells him that she knows what he saw. Meanwhile, the rest of the X-Men go their separate ways. We get a little scene with each of them. Nature Girl's checking in on her plants. X-23 is thinking about how she misses Logan. Jean Grey's taking a shower. And thinking about how it always feels like the X-Men are running in circles. Colossus is continuing to paint Kitty Pryde, and maybe that's why he's so angry about Apocalypse and about Jean Grey, or Kitty Pryde rather, because he's, you know, the sight of her is bringing up these emotions, and obviously we know the root of that, but it's bringing up these emotions, and he doesn't know how to deal with them. You know, he's always shut those emotions down, as far as he remembers. So it's kind of scary to him, right? He clearly is infatuated. And meanwhile, Nightcrawler's headed to the studio because they called him in for something. Meanwhile, we see X-Man, and I'm not sure if he is in an attic or in a basement, but he basically has a model of the city and of the planet itself. And he's thinking about how there's so much to take care of, and he's stuck dealing with petty arguments, the same ones they've always had. Like, it's supposed to be utopia, it's supposed to be better, and here they are having the same old arguments. Should they act? Should they be a little more passive? And he's thinking about the division within the team. He's like, it's fascinating. Even when compelled to be nothing but individuals, that's the idea that he keeps planting in their head, they keep wanting to group together and take sides. And again, like, I'm sorry, you're supposed to be the smart guy, X-Man. Nature Girl just told you why they're doing it. It's hard coded into who they are. It's in our genetics as humans, you know, as this species, that you're going to group together. You're fighting against millions of years of evolution. It's just ludicrous that you think this is actually going to work. And so he says, I have to remind myself, nobody can see it on the scale that I can. I've got to drift further from their own dreams and make sure they keep from getting too close, keep them from forming bonds. I've got to show them enlightenment isn't the destination. It's this life is a river, right? It's you've got to, it's the journey that matters. And again, this is against human nature. People want happiness. They want, you know, reward for their existence, you know, which comes with feelings of love and feelings of fulfillment from being in a romantic relationship, feeling like you're heading somewhere. You know, what good is just cruising along the river if you have no destination? And I'm not saying you ever need to reach the destination, but at least you know where you're headed. At least it's a goal. At least you, you know, are hoping to head somewhere rather than just bobbing along indefinitely. So meanwhile, back in Magneto's quarters, Storm is imploring him, hey, you know, we need to talk about this. And he's like, not here. We can't talk about this here. So they fly off and they actually head into a storm, very similar to the one that they were fighting in the Bahamas. And this is the scene that we saw in the opening pages. And they're talking about whether it could be real or not. And they're saying it, the last few years feel like a dream. It's hard to understand. It's just disorienting. But there's just such a disparity between history as we think it is and history as it's been shown to us. And a Storm wants to take this problem to X-Men and to Jean Grey, because they're, you know, powerful psychics, and see if that, you know, if they can find anything out about it. And they're going over the memories that they do know and trying to see how they match up. And Storm says, well, you know, we have this problem with Ensaba Nerve. Could he wield reality shifting powers like Scarlet Witch? And Magneto warns, you know, let's, you know, humans by nature, they want to see patterns. And just because we have one problem with him doesn't mean we should attribute all the problems in the world to him. So I don't think we want to go there yet. But, you know, we'll keep it in mind. And meanwhile, X-Man is, you know, floating and looking down at the model of the Earth that he has. And he's thinking about how he needs to keep things running and make sure he's exerting his will so that what he wants to pass will pass. And then all of a sudden he feels that there's a giant void. And he says, we're in the middle of the story and it has to work. I don't have any other choice. This is all I have. The gift of healing falls on my shoulders. And he's trying to apparently heal some void in the world that he's feeling. But he's not sure if he's going to have the power to do it on his own. So he starts actually looking around and reaching out for Magneto and Storm to see if he can get their help. And meanwhile, Magneto is saying that not everybody's capable of learning. So they need to make a show of force. He wants to kill Ensaba Nerve, like set an example. And, you know, you can't deny your nature. And Storm kind of calls him out on that. She goes, you always see it, us versus them. But what you have to remember is we're all mutants now. There's only us. There are no sides. But we can't do anything until we consult the others. And Magneto's like, see, this is exactly why I didn't want to talk to you. And, you know, Storm again arguing, saying, no, we can't stay silent. We need to let everybody know what we saw. If anybody can make sense of this, it's Jean and Nate. Magneto disagrees. He says, no, we live in isolation for a reason. You know, the less they know, the better. And again, Storm calling Magneto out on his nature, on who he is. I really hope that trust no one part of you was gone, Eric. Before they can go any farther, before they can, make a decision, X-Men shows up. And he says, I thought you guys had enough rain for one day. I've been looking for you two. There's a huge rift that I've sensed, and it's over the Rocky Mountains, some kind of anomaly, and whatever it is, it's out of control. Can you guys come take a look with me? And they kind of exchange a glance and say, yes, of course. So the three of them head off to the Rocky Mountains. What they find there is another huge rift that looks very similar to the rift that Magneto saw when he saw his visions, or the rift that Storm saw when she saw her vision. So it's clear that maybe X-Man doesn't have enough power to really keep this thing going. These rifts keep appearing and people are seeing events from the past or from, you know, another reality. And they're basically watching this scene play out of when Cyclops killed Professor Xavier, and Storm decides, like, regardless of what Magneto had wanted, she's not even like, forget about the decision. We're seeing this live. I'm going to tell him. And so she says, look, this isn't the first time we've seen something like this. Magneto and I were just talking about these manifestations. We don't know what they are. And X-Men, yeah, well, I heard everything. You weren't meant to see this. So of course he was eavesdropping. Of course. So Magneto can sense Nate in his mind. He says, wait, what are you doing? And Nate's like, you know, I'm sorry. It happened so fast. I'm doing the best I can. And Storm's, you know, same thing. Like, what are you doing? What are you talking about? And he says, look, the last few years have been so hard for mutant kind. I wanted to give us the story we deserve. So, you know, he made up all this stuff, the resolution and all that, you know, we know that. An excuse for fascism, basically. And I don't know why he thinks this utopia, quote unquote utopia, that it requires these fascist rules. But he does. I think it's naive. I think it's immature. But, you know, those are two words that describe X-Men very well. And it's not necessarily his fault. It has to do with, you know, the Age of Apocalypse that he was born in and how he was raised without, you know, friends and family and in isolation. So he doesn't value relationships as much as he should. So meanwhile, Magneto's like, no, you are done messing with my mind. And he's about to attack when X-Men just launches this huge burst of energy, knocks them both back. They recover relatively quickly. And Magneto's like, how could you betray us so easily? And they try to attack again. And X-Men says, you know, betrayal is a concept for people who see the world in black and white. But unlike you, I believe there's a way to achieve peace without killing people. You're not acting like an X-Men, because what's the point of being alive if you don't have your freedom, if you're just a puppet? You might as well be dead. You might as well be killing the people. So anyway, he uses a huge amount of his power and tells them, go home, and they literally fade out. I imagine they're going to just wake up in their beds tomorrow and not remember anything. And X-Men says, I need to be alone, and he concentrates his power on the rift to close it. And in fact, he thinks they'll wake up tomorrow and remember nothing, feel nothing. It's like, man, I'm so tired. I'm so sick for having to do this to people that I respect, go in and play with their memories and their thoughts. He says the regret weighs on me heavier every time, but they wouldn't even give me a second to explain. Well, because you're crazy. Your explanation is going to make no sense. It doesn't even make logical sense. It's, what you're doing is wrong. But he thinks to himself, you know, if I could tell them the truth and explain my dream, then I know they would understand. But instead, they're too busy, you know, forming bonds that force us to see ourselves as others do. And that's kind of interesting. I don't think that's necessarily true. Like, yes, we're going to try to form bonds, and that's always going to happen. Again, that's hard-coded into our DNA, like I was saying earlier, just like Nature Girl was saying. And the fact that X-Men thinks he can change that may be his biggest folly of all. But I don't think forming bonds forces us to see ourselves as others do. I think if you lack self-confidence and if you're insecure, that could be the case. And there's a couple more words that describe X-Men very well. So he's actually a very well fleshed out character. But he's saying, you know, I've read their minds and they still see me as the time lost, brash, headstrong kid in a leather jacket. So I'm forced to see myself that way, and I hate it. Why? If they're making that mistake and underestimating you, that's on them. You need to be strong enough and confident enough in your own abilities to see yourself as you want to be seen. And if you think you're still a time-lost, brash, headstrong kid in a leather jacket, and that's not who you want to be, then change it. Then learn and grow and evolve. You know, he's blaming everybody else, and he's accepting how he thinks they see him. That's no way to live. That's not being a man. That's not being grown up. That's not being mature. So, you know, he's complaining about them seeing him as a kid, and in retaliation for that, he's acting like a little kid. So, I don't know, self-fulfilling prophecy. He goes, I'm not my past. Well, you kind of are. I mean, the whole reason that you've created this world is because of what's happened in your past. He says, I'm the world in front of me. I disagree with that too. So, X-Men, he's not thinking straight. He's just he's not a good character. You know, he's not a, I say not a good character. I mean, he's a good character for the story. He's not mature. He's not grown up. He's not, self-aware enough. His conclusions are diluted. You know, he needs somebody, and Jean tried to do it at the end of the Uncanny X-Men weekly series, you know, tried to be his mother and explain to him. It's not all his fault. Again, it goes back to the way he was raised. He didn't have parents to teach him these kind of lessons, and he draws the wrong conclusions. You know, he's supposed to be so smart, but I think socially he's extremely immature, and he doesn't grasp basic concepts that seem kind of obvious to me. So anyway, it ends with an interesting quote from Jean-Paul Sartre from No Exit. It says, "Hell is other people." That's a very appropriate way to end it, right? Because that's X-Men's fault. Like, or X-Men's problem, his biggest problem. He could easily create a utopia if it didn't have to have any people in it. You know, he can repair the ecosystem and, you know, make sure all the animals have plenty to eat and tame the storms and make sure crops are growing and such. Vegetation, I guess. I guess they're not crops, so there's no people to eat them. But it's always the people that cause the problems, right? And hell is other people, so... Anyway, that's how the issue ends. Really good issue. Lots of breakdown. A lot that we're understanding about X-Men and why his dream, as he calls it, is not going to work. But it does diminish the character a little bit. I mean, I did like him when he was a little more brash and young and confident, because he feels so weak now. I mean, he's strong in his power, but just... weak of character, you know, and it's disappointing. It's diminishing. And, not a lot of fun to see, you know, like if you knew him personally, if he was a friend of yours and you saw him making these kind of mistakes, you know, or if you know somebody in your life who's making these kind of mistakes, who's constantly down and morose and putting the blame on other people, but is, you know, really stubborn and can't see the forest for the trees, you would try to help that person. You would try to reach out and explain to them the way they're deluding themselves. You can't help it, you know, when somebody's this lost. So I guess we'll have to wait and see how it all gets resolved. So I'll take this opportunity to wish everybody happy holidays, as I've been doing on these 12 days of the Comic Source episodes. We're doing it because we love comics, and we're doing it because we want you all to enjoy comics and have plenty of comic content to listen to and to enjoy during the holidays. If you have any time off, if you're traveling, that sort of thing, please be safe. If you can't see your family in person, you know, there's plenty of ways to visit with them virtually, and that could be a great substitute. And we'll all look forward to, you know, a better Christmas in 2021. So, again, hope you all enjoy it. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.